Okay, as I said, my name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. And this is the way we have this thing worked out. This is going to be step 10, you know, sort of, kind of, you know, and then there's going to be 11 next week, and then 12 I'm going to finish up, and that's the deal with that. And so that's my deal with the room. So that's how we're going to work it. And I had a, you know, I look at these steps are kind of interesting to me. I'm 60 years old. And came to AA when I was 31, when I had just turned 31. And you know, I was told, I don't know why you need to be told stuff like this, but I was told that I would change. I was told that my story would change. I was told that how I perceive things, how I think about myself, how I think about other people, things that I think are important or not, that we're all changing. You know, that's happened to me. That's happened to me. There's a difference. You have to trust me. I don't know how much of it is AA, how much of it is the transformation by God's Spirit, and how much of it is just growing old. You know, growing old will do that to you. You know, getting up there will do that to you. But the bottom line is, it's all sort of mixed together in such a way so that I'm a satisfied customer. I'm not concerned about it at all. I got my faults. I got things going on. But all in all, I'm not a complainer about anything. I'm okay with the deal. Okay. I don't even care if the deal involves a little suffering here and there, or a lot of suffering here and there. I'm prepared for that deal. It's okay with me. You know, I've gone through the financial debacles, the foreclosures, the cancer treatments, the radiation therapy, the crazy children. You know, I have four children in this program. Four. Try to raise four children, you know. Six grandchildren. I've got a wife of 28 or 29 years, you know, I can do 18 meetings just on that deal, you know? You know, the part of the story where he says acceptance is the answer to all your problems? You read like one paragraph down from that, he starts talking about his wife, you know? I know what that guy was talking about, you know? You know, so, hey Travis, how you doing, buddy? So, I've been doing this for a while, and I've changed a lot, and you know, what happens is you get a different perspective on these things. You just see things that, I was talking to a guy today, I like talking to alcoholics. I like talking to anybody who's on a spiritual path. You don't have to be an alcoholic. You don't have to have a medallion in your pocket to be my friend. I like talking to people at church. I like talking to anybody who's either focused on God or, how about this, or looking for relief. Seriously looking for relief. You know, there's some people that are not looking for relief. They'll like fool you. They sound like they're looking for relief, but what they're really looking for is attention. It's a big difference. You know what I mean? You'll think they're looking for relief because they're complaining and they're doing all sorts of stuff. And you'll think, this is how they'll fool you. You'll think what they're saying is, I need help. Will you give me a suggestion? And you'll make the mistake that we all do of taking them at their word. And you'll go up and you'll try to help them only to be slapped down. Or saying thanks but no thanks. You say, what's going on with this deal? And you say, because some people are looking for help, and some people are looking to grow up, and some people are looking for a power greater than themselves where they can live an incredible life, and some people are just looking what they've always been looking for, a whole group of people to congregate about around them and feel sorry for them, you know, and say, poor you, poor you. I like hanging around the people. You know, I used to be, you know, when you're an alcoholic, one of the things you find out about being an alcoholic is the drinking is the least of the problems. Now, listen to me. The drinking is like a big problem. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's a reason why the name of this organization is Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, instead of Emotional Misfits that's Anonymous. But let me explain this to you based upon almost 29 years of doing this stuff. The drinking is a major problem. You don't get over the drinking, okay? You ain't never going to get to the good stuff, okay? And it's going to be a bad deal. But let me tell you what the deal is. I've been around AA meetings. How many people have been to more AA meetings, more AA groups than this group? Raise your hand. Okay. Have you noticed that all these other AA meetings, have you noticed that in Alcoholics Anonymous, listen to this, tell me if I'm not the only one. I've been all over the world. I've been in Indonesia at AA meetings. I've been all over the world. Tell me whether you noticed the same thing I noticed. Have you noticed the lack of drinking in AA rooms? Have you noticed that? I mean, have you noticed that it's like not a big problem? You know, I mean, you don't really, when you go to an AA room, you don't say, what am I going to do about those falling down drunks? It seems to me that, for the most part, the drinking problem is pretty much in check inside of Alcoholics Anonymous. Would I be correct in that? Yeah, I think so. I think so. Now, so even though drinking's a big problem, the bottom line is inside Alcoholics Anonymous, once you're here, it's really not a problem at all. Now, it can become a problem real fast, but it's really not a problem. The real problem is something called alcoholism. You see, in the 12 and 12, it says, unless and until an alcoholic can accept his alcoholism. Now, here's the deal. Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, do you know what that means? Does anybody know what that means? Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. Anybody have a dictionary? I don't have a dictionary on me, you know, but listen to me. I'm not sure anybody in here really wants precarious sobriety. I think it's like a bad thing, you know? It's like teeter-totter, okay? Now listen, it gets even better. Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, and of true happiness, he'll find none at all. Of true happiness, he'll find none at all. You know, there's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that aren't happy with their sobriety. They're just not happy campers. They're like the guy in Vision for You. You ever read that thing in Vision for You? Where it says, now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment. Being dry at the moment can mean like 10 years. You know, I was with a guy today who has 3.5 years sobriety. And a nice guy, and I care for these guys that are trying. And you want to something else? We had a long talk about some stuff. And he's at 3.5 years, and his sobriety is precarious. And he's not happy with his sobriety. You know that? He's not happy with his sobriety, and his sobriety is precarious. And there's people like that all over Alcoholics Anonymous. It's part of 3.5 years. Part of 4 years, it's part of 5, it's part of 10 years. You know, people go through it. Everybody goes through it. Where you're going through the motions and you're doing, you know, at 3.5 or 4 years, or 5 years or 6 or 7 or 8 years, that kind of thing, you know just about enough to get your sorry ass in trouble. Because here's the deal. You're far enough away from the booze where you can like make believe like you don't have to worry about the booze. Because booze is not a problem. But you're not far enough into the maturity where you're really ready to take on all the vicissitudes of life. And you're far enough along the line where unless you're well sponsored, nobody's going to beat you up. Nobody's going to give you any direction. And if anybody gives you direction, you're gonna talk back to them or get uppity or get defiant. So during that sort of teenage period between 3 and 15 or 20 years, that kind of thing, you know, it's, yeah, I am talking about you, Otto. During that period of time, it's very easy to go off course. And you know something? You got 5, 6, 7, 10, 15 years, you ready for this? Ain't nobody gonna stop you. Nobody's going to stop you from running into the traffic. Nobody's going to go up to you. You know, nobody really wants to put up with your bullshit, and nobody's going to stop you. And you see, if you got 7 years, nobody with less than 7 years is going to stop you. And most of the people on the other side, they ain't going to stop you either. So you're just going to keep on going until you fall down and burst or die or ask for help. Because you know the one thing an alcoholic hates to do is ask for help. Listen, whenever I have anybody come up to me, listen. I know if anybody asks me for help, they really are desperate. You know, that's the good thing about my deal is that somehow, some way, and I don't know why this is, I don't have to put up with much bullshit. By the time they get to me, it's desperation time. You know, it's like I am literally the last out. I'm the last guy they ever want to speak to. I don't know why. You know what I mean? But I am. So, and why do I even mention this stuff? Well, it's because on the 10th step, everybody wants to talk about inventory. The 10th step, it's like, you know, they want to talk about taking an inventory. I don't want to talk about that stuff. It's not really important. The inventory stuff back on the 4th step, it's not about inventory. 10th step is not about inventory. I mean, it is, but really isn't. You know what I mean? Let me tell you what the 10th step is about. 10th step is about something that everybody, I don't say everybody, something that'll kill you. I'll tell you what's the kill, what the operative word of the 10th step is. You know what it is? Continue. Continue. People who drink, they have a problem continuing. It's the continuing problem. You know, this thing don't work well as a diet. You know, listen, I'm terrible at diets. I mean, there's probably people here that are good. You know what the problem with diets? The problem with diets is going on diets like going on an airplane. Eventually you get off. Or you screw up, or you mess up, or you know, I can't do this thing as a diet. Diets don't work for me. You know, it's like doing jail time. You know, it's like, they have, you know, I know Kieran knows a little about, he got out of jail, you know, after doing a little stretch. You know, I guess there's hard time and there's easy time. You know, there's some guys that do time and they get accustomed to it and they can do it and they get it and they get out. And there are other guys, it's like hard time. It's, you know, there are different ways of doing this deal. And you know the crazy thing is about Alcoholics Anonymous? You could be schizophrenic, biting your nails to the bone, screaming at people, suicidal, hating yourself and everything around you, and doing horribly, and just miserable, and looking for a drink, looking for an excuse to drink, and say, well, this is just the way it is, it's a bunch of crap, and just being crappy. And here's the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. You could be absolutely a homicidal, suicidal maniac at 16 years. But if you hit 16 years and you don't have a drink, you could have killed 20 people and shot yourself, they'll give you a medallion anyway. They will. I'm telling you. You got people picking up medallions in here after 10, 20 years that you wouldn't trust your kids with. That you wouldn't loan $10 to. I can tell you this. Most people in AA, if they ask you, if you lend somebody $20 for 30 days, that's an absolute guarantee that on the 31st day, you're going to have a resentment. Better just give it away. So that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about who continues and who doesn't continue. Now, this is a tough thing. If you think you can do this thing based upon sheer willpower for 28 years and get away with it and feel good about yourself and be, what do they say, experience much of heaven, be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which you had not even dreamed? I don't think so. So it says in Vision for You, what does it say? It says, once in a while we see a guy being, an alcoholic being dry at the moment. It says this is what he says. He says, hey, I look better. I feel better. Hey, I'm having a better time. You know, when we hear this, we laugh. This is what it says in the book. It says, we laugh at such, we smile at such salad. We know he will soon try the old game again. How do they know that? You know, when I first read that in the big book, you know, once in a while, being dry at the moment, a person says, hey, I'm looking better, I'm feeling better, I'm having a better time, I'm not even thinking about drinking. When I heard them say, we smile so solid, we know our old friend will be trying the old game again. Here's what I'm thinking. How do they know that? I'm telling you, 2 years sobriety. I didn't know how they knew that. At 5 years sobriety, I didn't know how, that didn't make any sense. You know what makes sense to me? Hey, I feel better, I look better, I'm having a better time. Sounds to me like you're going to make it. At 7 years sobriety, I didn't understand that. Being around 15 years sobriety, I understood that. It started making absolute sense to me. There's a lot of stuff that started making sense to me. There's a lot of stuff that'll make sense to you at 20 years that you won't even see at 5 years. There's a lot of stuff you'll see at 15 years that won't make sense to you that'll make sense to you at 25 years. See, at 20 years, because this has to do with less brain power. Hey, our problem is brain power. And intellect. I wish this ain't an intellectual thing. We got more smart people bouncing out of these rooms. This has to do with more experience. You know, it's that old saying I say, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, the man with the money will walk away with an experience. And the bottom line is here's what happens. When I was about 8 months sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I met a young lady in an A room. She came there for the first time. Pretty gal, nice gal. And she sounded like she was really ready, and she had gone through a hard time, and she went to a meeting. She had that light in her eye, and she was listening to everything everybody was saying. She was eating it up. I said, hey, come back next week. And this is what she said to me. I'll never forget it. This is the first time this happened to me. I didn't put this together until years later. She said, oh, well, I have to go to my sister's wedding in Tampa next week. But don't worry about that. He says, I've got this thing. I feel better. I'm doing better. Everything's going great. I'm not going to drink. Everything's going to be okay. And I said, yeah, but watch out. So he says, no, don't even worry. I'm fine. When she got back 2 months later, she had gotten 4 DUIs in 1 hour by hitting 4 different cars, and all her teeth were knocked out. And she was facing all sorts of charges. I know because I represented her. And the bottom line is that's what happened to her. And then I had another guy I called up that I sponsored on the phone, and he hadn't been to a meeting in a while, and he had just gone back from Wyoming. And I said, hey, how you doing? Hey, I haven't seen you. Hey, would it be a good idea to go to a meeting? I haven't been to a meeting in a while. He says, hey, get off my back. Hey, I'm not even thinking about drinking. Drinking's not even a problem. I'm doing great. I feel that, hey, listen, the last thing you got to worry about me is drinking. I don't even feel like having a drink. By 5 o'clock that day, he was drunk. And what happened is, over the last 28 years, I can't tell you, imagine this. Imagine you're in a fellowship, we'll call it Alcoholics Anonymous. And every time somebody comes up to you and says, man, don't even worry, I'm not even thinking about drinking. I feel great, I'm looking great, drinking's not even a problem, this thing is licked, okay? I'm okay, you understand? I got it made. And imagine every time that happens to you, within a month the guy drinks. I mean, I just want you to think about that. You're in a fellowship for 28 years. You're in the alcoholics. Every time a guy says those words, you know, every time a guy comes up to you and says, you got a pickle, he drinks. You got a pickle, he drinks. Hundreds of people come in. Hey, by the way, you got a pickle? Yeah. He goes down and gets drinks. Now, let me ask something. Now, after 28 years, and you've seen thousands of guys drink who say, you got a pickle. You understand? If a guy comes up to you and shakes your hand, will you sponsor him and say, yeah, he says, by the way, you got a pickle. What are you going to think? Say he's going to drink, right? You can't explain why he's going to drink. You may not even understand why he's going to drink. What you know is, after 28 years, every person that's ever said, you got a pickle, he drinks. They don't know. They don't understand why having a pickle has anything to do with drinking. But all I know is, whenever somebody says a phrase a certain way, they drink. Now, I do understand. I think I understand why that happens. So after 28 years or 25 years or 20 years of doing this, when I read this thing now and it says, now and then a serious drinker says, feel better, look better, I'm having a better time, I don't even miss it at all. It says, we smile at a guy like that. We know he's soon going to try the... I understand why they say that, because that's been their experience. Because guys that really comprehend powerlessness. Remember, the first step is the only step you have to do to perfection, 100% perfection. Because people that understand the word powerlessness and being powerless over alcohol never talk that way. They may talk close to that. They may say, hey, I'm feeling great, thanks a lot. Or God bless, you know, hey, you know, but for the grace of God, or I'm doing fine, or, you know, but they never say, hey, I'm having a better time, I don't miss it at all. I mean, they never get cocky like that. They never get that cocky, I've got the world by the balls. They never got that deal going on, because they always know. It's not that they're worried about drinking. It's not that they sit around anxious about it. But you know what happens? There's some sort of transformation that happens within them. So they know to the marrow of their bones that they're only sober but for the grace of God or some higher power, and it has absolutely nothing to do with them. They've got some sort of humility, although they never say I have humility, or some sort of understanding, or there's something about their aspect that they're not bragging about being sober. They feel funny about taking credit about it, because they know it really has absolutely nothing to do with them. And, you know, people like that, people who feel that way, who have that, whatever that gift is, or I don't even know how you get it. You know, here's the crazy thing. I can't even take credit for the gift. It's a gift. I can't even say, this is the real frustrating thing. If somebody came up to me and say, how did you get it? I'd have to say, I don't know. When did you get it? I'm not sure. Did it come from the sky? Did it come from the ground? I know that some people got it and some people don't. You know, can you catch it in here? Maybe. You know, I mean, I believe it's a God thing. It's something inexplicable. I mean, but I wouldn't even know. You understand? If Karen came up to me and says, how did you get this? I wouldn't know how to tell him to get it. You know, I wouldn't know how to tell him to get it. You somehow get it, you know? Maybe you get it over a period of time. Maybe you get a little of it at first, and then it grows and it grows and grows. So somewhere along the line, you really got it. But I know when you get it, you got it. And what it means is it has something to do, because of that transformation of understanding to the marrow of your bones, that you're powerless over alcohol. You see, this is the weirdest thing. I've been sober almost 29 years. And there's not even a question in my mind that I gotta be drunk in an hour. And I can't even explain. And I don't want to drink. I don't plan on drinking. You know, I don't feel. But there's absolutely, if somebody said to me, are you absolutely certain you wouldn't drink in an hour? I said, listen, are you absolutely certain you're going to stay sober? I said, I ain't absolutely certain. I ain't going to run out the door right now and start drinking. Now, you may think that's a bad thing, but for a guy like me, who's cocky and arrogant, it sort of keeps me on my toes. See, I need somebody to keep me honest. You know, I mean, everybody needs some, you know, even my wife's good, but not good enough. You know what I mean? And a sponsor is good, but I need something going on to keep me honest. You know, lest I start believing my own press that I have something to do with this thing. You know, and that's why, and all I know is it has something to do with the thing that's absolutely instrumental. Like Bill Wilson said, that's essential, is faith in God. Absolutely essential. Because otherwise, you start thinking it's you. And you know, after the alcohol, after you come in here, they talk about the selfishness and the self-centeredness, that being the root of our problem. And that has to do with our thinking. You know, what it says, filled with 100 forms of self-delusion, self-pity, self-centeredness. What does that mean? That means you're always thinking about yourself. Always thinking. It's always, what are the thoughts about? Me, 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 me at 78 RPM. Me, 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 me. Me, me, me. Sometimes 18 voices talking about you at the same time. Sometimes it sounds like it's talking about me, but it's really about talking about you and how you feel about me and how I make you feel about you and what you think about me and why do you think about me that way. And it's all about me, 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 me. And it's all about, and getting into things is all about me, and acquiring this, it's about me, and you know, cut my hair, me, lose weight, me, me. It's all, the whole life, an entire life spent on doing one thing, sleeping and thinking about me. What am I going to eat? What am I going to wear? How do I look? Listen, if they took all your thoughts about you out of your brain, what would your thought life be? We're talking blank city, aren't we? Zombie land, right? Absolutely. You know what the big book says about that? It says that's the root of our problem. You think you're addicted to alcohol. Hey, you're not addicted to alcohol anymore. You know why? Because we are an Alcoholics Anonymous. We have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and the body. You know what the hopeless state of mind and the body is? It's the drinking. You see, I know what it's like not to be able to stop. You see, that's what separates us from the normal neurotic crazies. They may be not neurotic and crazy and weird. You know what I mean? But they don't do one of those things, I need a drink. They don't look some guy in the eye and say, I need help, I can't stop drinking. They don't get into that hopeless state of mind and body where they wake up in the morning and say, I'm not gonna drink again. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, they're drunk. And they do that thing over and over and over and over again. But you know, if you're an alcoholic, you know, everybody who comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, think about this. I have never seen anybody who comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, there's probably one or two, but I've never met them, who doesn't get relieved of that hopeless state of mind and body. Now, it may only be for 30 days. It may only be for a week. It may be for a year. It may be for 10 years. But everybody comes in here because they look somebody in the eye or they look up something and they say, I need help. I can't stop drinking. They come in here because they can't. They don't come in here for like the coffee or for the girl. They come in here Because they can't stop drinking. So it seems like a reasonable place to go. Alcoholics Anonymous. They come in here because they can't stop drinking because they have an alcohol problem. And within a week or a day or that afternoon or 3 hours later, you know what happens? They stop drinking. People who couldn't stop drinking, all of a sudden they stop drinking. But they're still thinking about drinking. And then within a week, within a month, all of a sudden they're not thinking about it. They're not thinking about drinking. They're not thinking about not drinking. And all of a sudden, they have recovered. They have been given a choice. They no longer have to drink. They have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body, only to learn that that was never the problem in the first place. Because somewhere along the line, or after a year, or 2 years, or 3 years, every alcoholic who's on the face of the earth comes to the inevitable conclusion that they're actually crazy. Oh yeah, it's true, you know? If it hasn't hit yet, it will. You'll come to the point where you're not drinking, you're not doing drugs, you know, you're going to meetings, and something will happen, and you'll realize, you know, I'm absolutely, certifiably nuts. You know what I mean? And you will have a real clear glance. You will understand precisely, you'll say, now I know why I drank. Because this is for crap. You know what I mean? Because if I didn't drink, I would have blown my brains out. Because I don't like this life deal at all. It doesn't suit me at all. And you'll understand that drinking wasn't the problem. Drinking was the solution to our problem. And I drank because no girl, no amount of money, no car, no suit of clothes ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks. And if you drank alcohol and it did for you what it did for me, you wouldn't stop either. And now I can't drink, and now I got to deal with the real problem. And what's the real problem? Selfishness, self-centeredness. Now I got to deal with the brain. I mean, I used to drink booze. It used to turn down those voices. It used to throw that self-centeredness. It used to assuage that stuff. Now I got to deal with that other addiction, the addiction to me. Me. I wake up in the morning. You know what I'm thinking about? Me. I get in my car, you know what I'm thinking about? Me. I get to work, you know what I'm thinking about? Me. I'm on a telephone call with you, you know what I'm thinking about? Me. My wife calls up, you know what I'm thinking about? Me. You know, I go to lunch with the guys and everything, you know what I'm thinking about? Me. I leave my office, you know what I'm thinking about? Me. I come in here, I'm thinking about me. I go home, I'm thinking about me. I watch TV, I'm like a little bit deflected, but I'm thinking about me. Then I go to bed at night and I think about me. And then you know what I do? I wake up the next morning, you know what I do? I start the thing all over again. How would you like a whole life of that? You know what it says in the big book? It says selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the root of our problems. Driven by 100 forms of this, fear, self-delusion, self-centered. We step on the toes of others, they retaliate. He says an alcoholic is an extreme example of self will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. He says above all, this is even after the booze. It says we must get rid of this selfishness. And this is what it says. It says we must, or it kills us. It doesn't say we must, or it like bruises us, or it kills us. We must, or it kills us. He says, and then you know what it says after that? It says, God solves this problem. That's what it says. It says, God will solve this problem. And without his aid and assistance, we can't get away from it. And that's why it says, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to you and countless others. And so you read in this book where they talk about being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed, experiencing much of heaven. It says if you sincerely take this position, all sorts of remarkable things will happen. Being all-powerful will give you everything you need as long as you stay close to him and do his work well. You know, it says all that incredible stuff in this book about the kind of incredible life. In the promises, it says you're going to know a new freedom. There's going to be a new happiness. You won't even regret the past. You won't never be fear of people. It's going to leave you. You know, you're going to be able to get up here. Forget about Russell. And you know, he says, how can he do this? You're going to be doing this stuff. You're going to be talking your head off about everything that this is happening to you and how great your life is without any fear. You know why? Because you're so excited about living. And why wouldn't you? What are you scared of, people? You're not scared of that anymore. Financial insecurity is not going to bother you anymore. Not that you won't be broke. It's just not going to bother you. Whoa. And then what, you know what it says after that? It says, we will see that God is doing for us. There he is again. What we could not do for ourselves. And that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the joy of living. Not that everything's going good all the time. Hey, we learn the value of suffering. Are you suffering? Yeah. How do you feel? Great. You know? It's part of the package, man. You know? You learn the joy. You learn the joy. Now, you don't get that deal. You don't get that. It's like, you know, when in Alcoholics Anonymous, this is what you're dealing with. It's sort of like you don't get that faith deal. You don't get that transformation deal. And I understand that. What color is this book? Blue. We all say it's blue. So a guy comes in here, blind guy. He sits down right there. And I say, do you know what color this book is? And he says, I don't even know what a color is. And I say, what's your name? What's your name? Katoya, would you explain to Ralph, the blind guy, about the color blue? What are you going to tell him? Well, the book is blue, but he said, okay, what's blue? What are you going to tell him? How are you going to explain the color blue to him? He's blind. You don't even know where to start. Well, that's okay. We got Kieran here. So what are you going to explain to him? He wants to know about the color blue. Explain the color blue to him. So let me ask you something. We're never going to be able to explain the color blue to him. You know, if he doesn't get his sight, he will never experience the color blue. Now let me ask you something. If because he never will experience the color blue, or you'll never be able to explain to him the color blue, or he has no knowledge of the color blue, does that make this book not blue? It's not blue to him, but does that make it not blue? Blue's still there. Now let me tell you what this deal is about in Alcoholics Anonymous. This blue is faith. This book is about faith in God. It's about faith. The only difference is instead of 50 people at an AA meeting seeing a blue book and having one blind guy, in AA, what you have is you have one guy seeing the color blue and 50 people not understanding what blue is all about. You understand that? That's the way it works in here. The way it works in here is the majority of the people are blind. A few can see the color blue. And because it's a sickness that blinds you. Because one of the consequences of alcoholism is not being able to see the color blue. One of the consequences of alcoholism is not being able to have faith. Not allowing yourself to have faith. And so what happens is you have a lot of people, like they say in the big book, walking around like zombies, doing this thing sort of like on automatic pilot, working the steps, going to the meetings, doing all this stuff, but it's like cardboard. It's a form of religion without power. There's no power, there's no excitement, there's no enthusiasm. They got dead eyes. It's all about dead eyes. And so I'm looking at this guy today, and he's got 3.5 years, and he's got the dead eyes. And he's going to meetings, and he's got a sponsor, and he's doing this, but you want to know something? He's got the dead eyes. You know, he's not excited. And so finally asked him, I said, you're not happy with your sobriety. He said, you're not happy about your sobriety. He says, you're right, I'm not. I said, I know you're not. I said, because you're not doing this deal. You're doing a form of this deal. You know, you're sort of making believe you're faking this deal, but you're not doing this deal. You don't got what they're talking about. You haven't laid hold. You see, what good does it do to do all the steps to get in there, to gain the whole world in this thing, if you lose your soul? What good does it do to be able to, you come out at the end of these steps and it lays you on step 11, where it all talks about conscious contact with God. It talks about that flimsy reed being the all-powerful hand of God. What good is it to work a program recovery where these are just mere tools to get you to the real meat and potatoes, and that is the power of God transforming your life and having a real relationship with it? Burn the idea into every man's mind that he can get well regardless of anything. Job or no job, wife or no job, wife, it'll always work. It all depends upon his relationship with God. Your only defense is your relationship with God. What good is it to do all this stuff if you have no relationship with God? You know, anybody here ever have a best friend? You ever have a best friend? Anybody here have a friend? Well, when you have a good friend, a real good friend, you think about that friend? You think about that friend, don't you? You like talking to a friend, you like hanging around that friend. You like thinking about that friend. you have other friends that are also friends with that friend. When you're with that friend makes you feel better. So when you're not with that friend, you know what you're thinking about? You say, I wonder what my friend's doing. You know, sometimes you'll go somewhere and you know what you do? You pick up the phone and they say, I want to call somebody. And you'll say, and you'll call up your friend. And your friend will call up you. And somehow, wherever you are, wherever you're lost, you feel okay because you always know you got a friend, you got somebody you can call up, right? So when they talk about having a relationship with God, they're talking about having a relationship with God. They're talking about having a relationship with God. What would it be like to have a relationship with God like you have a relationship with your best? You're always thinking about him. When he doesn't seem around, you sort of miss him. You wonder what he's doing. You want to hang out with people that's talking about you. You say, you're going to hang with that crowd because you want to hang out with people that are about him or talking about him or lead you closer to him. Isn't this what the 11th step is all about? The 10th step leads you to the 11th step, getting closer to him. And you know, when you're in that deal, when you're wrapped in that deal, it's sort of easy to continue. Because somehow continuing, the motivation to continue is all wrapped up in searching for him. It's all wrapped up in finding him and wanting to be with him. And so you never get tired of it, you know, because you just wake up and you're just sort of, you wake up and you know what you're thinking about? You're thinking about him. You get in your car and want to go to work and you know what you're thinking about? You're thinking about him. You know, you're on the phone with other people, you're thinking about him. You go to sleep at night, you think about him, and then you start the process all over again. And you know what you find out? What's really weird when you think about him all the time, you're talking to him, you're talking to other people that are talking about him, and you find out that other people have him as friends too. And you know something? They feel exactly like you do. They talk like you do. They think like you do. And you know what happens? The more you think about him, this is like really weird. You start feeling better. You start feeling like weird. Like good. Like excited about life. I'm 60, I'm 70, I'm 90. What does it matter? I feel great. Yeah, I'm going through problems, but that's okay. He'll take care of it for me. I rely on him. Yes, that's funny. When I was thinking about me, I felt like crap. You start saying, listen, I think about me, I feel like shit. I think about him, I feel good. You know something? You know what I realized? The more I think about him, the less I think about me. I think about him all the time. I don't think about me at all. Man, that thing about me, that's what they must mean when they say God makes that possible to get out of self-centeredness. So somehow this continuing this deal and being involved in this deal, instead of being drudgery and being something that you like have to do in order to stay sober, is all wrapped up in him. You know, that must be why they talk about him all the time in there, why they have that chapter to the agnostics. That must be why that deal is there. That must be why on page 71 of Dr. Bob and the Good Old Times, when they were talking about AA before we became cool, when they used to talk about him all the time, unashamedly, that must be why on page 71 it says, according to Bill, Ann Smith had decided that practical steps needed to be taken to protect her husband's newfound sobriety. She invited Bill to come live with them in Akron. There I might keep an eye on Dr. Bob and he on me, Bill said. The invitation came at an opportune time. Bill was about broke. Even though he had received some money from his partners in New York and was again hoping to come out ahead in the proxy fight that he had first brought him to Akron. The next 3 months, I lived with these two wonderful people, Bill said. I shall always believe they gave me more than I ever brought them. Each morning, there was a devotion, he recalled, after a long silence in which they awaited inspiration and guidance. Ann would read from the Bible. They didn't have the big one. Ann would read from the Bible. James was our favorite. He said, reading from her chair in the corner, she would softly conclude, faith without works is dead. This was a favorite quotation of Anne's, much as the book of James was a favorite with early AAs. So much so that the James Club was favored by some as the name for the fellowship. Sue also remembered, did you know that? That the alternate name for Alcoholics Anonymous was the James Club, named after a book in the Bible. A book in the Bible that they read for the first 4 years, where we say, rarely have we seen that person fail has thoroughly done what we've done, and that's what they did. A book from the Bible where in here, if you mention the Bible, they'll yell at you and beat you up. You understand? You understand why there's so few people that actually get this thing? You understand that even within the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a huge hue and cry against what this book actually talks about. And you know why there is? Because we're all alcoholics. And alcoholism is the antithesis. The whole scope and breadth and feeling and what it wants to drive you to, the entire sum total of alcoholism, if you want to define what alcoholism is, it is opposite this. Whatever they say this is, in order to do it, to be sober, alcoholism, which is like a gravitational pull, having to do with your mind and your feelings of yourself, and your selfishness and self-centeredness and full operating form, its absolute goal is to not do this. So on a good day, as you think you're doing strong, you think you're doing okay, you are hair-triggered to say this is a bunch of bullshit. To be, that's our chief characteristic, defiance. So did any wonder in a group of 100 AAs, if one guy stands up and talks about the Bible, or talks about Sermon on the Mount, which was actually the first, or talks about anything spiritual, you're going to hear people say, we don't want to hear that crap. And because we have such low self-esteem, and we're so tentative of ourselves, and we are so fearful of what other people think, so they will prostitute ourselves and our own values to do anything to be accepted, which is, by the way, one of the consequences of alcoholism. That's one of about 300. You understand, you know, one of the consequences of alcoholism is a desire, such a strong desire, not to be ostracized, to be rejected, that you'll prostitute your morals and you do things that are unhealthy and hang out with people who are unhealthy just so that they will like you. You understand that? That's why you spend money on things that you can't, afford and you shouldn't buy so that you want other people to think that you're cool or you like it. That's a consequence of alcoholism. That's why you go into debt. That's why you go into worry, because you're compelled to do that because deep down inside you feel worthless without the car, because you have no self-worth. You can have $1 billion. You still feel worthless. The more you buy, the more worthless you feel. Because it's all about filling up holes, because you're not okay without the stuff. You understand that? That's part of the, when it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts alcoholism and all its consequences, one of the consequences is that deal. Another consequence, there's a lot of consequences to becoming and being an alcoholic that are hidden, that are invisible, that you don't even know about because it's the way you feel naturally. It's the most natural thing in the world to feel and act on these consequences. And you don't even know it's part of alcoholism because you think it has something to do with resentments and it's all the way, it's that alcohol is but a symptom. You know, our disease centers in our mind, not our body. It's about every perception we have about ourselves and other people. And so it says it was a favorite quotation of Anne's, much as the book of James was a favorite of early A's. So much so that James was favored by some as the name of the fellowship. Sue also remembered a quiet time in the mornings, how they sat around reading the Bible. Later, they also used the Upper Room, a Methodist publication that provided a daily inspirational message. It's denominational in its approach. We get to this book, and all it talks about is building a relationship with him. And you know, once you have that relationship, you know, I'm with this young man. I'm trying to, you know, the greatest thing that can happen to us, unfortunately, it doesn't happen to a lot of them. Some people drink before it happens to them. They become desperate. This guy, what, 3.5 years? He was desperate. You know when you're desperate? You know what you'll do when you're desperate? There's two things. There's only one or two things an alcoholic will do when he's desperate. He'll either drink, okay, or he'll ask for help. He'll ask for help from people that he would never ask for help before. And if they're real desperate, you know what they'll really do? They'll listen and follow directions. You know? And so this guy called me up and he says, can we sit down and talk? And we sat down and talked. It didn't take me long to see the dead eyes. Well, I'm doing this and I'm doing that and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And I'm going here, but I'm going there. And he said, yeah, but you're dead. He said, you're dead. He says, yeah, but I'm doing this. I said, I know, but you're dead. Aren't you? You're not happy with your sobriety. And you know what he said to me? This is a lie out of the pit of hell. This is a panic lie out of the pit of hell. This is what he said. You know how many alcoholics? You know how many alcoholics in this world feel the same way? He said this at 3.5 years. He says, yeah. He says, I don't feel good. You know, I'm not happy. He says, but I've resigned myself to the fact that this is just the way it's going to be for me. And then I told him, I said, you know what you just said to me? He says, yeah. I said, I resigned myself. He says, that's not what you said to me. He says, you want to know what you said to me? He says, this is what he said. When you got 28 years, this is what I heard. He said, I resigned myself that this is just the way it's going to be to me now. You know what I heard? You guys didn't hear this. I heard this. I heard him say, I'm going to drink again. I heard him say, as clear as a bell, I'm going to drink again. Maybe not this month. Maybe not next month. Maybe not a year from now. He said, I'm going to drink again. Feel better, look better, having a better time, because he's not happy with his sobriety. Soon he will know loneliness as few men know. I saw a guy that's not going to be able to continue. He's got a wife and a couple little kids. He's going to put, unless something changes with him, eventually it's going to be a hard time for him. Eventually he's just going to give it up. He's going to say, what's the use? Because no alcohol can continue under that. And even if he could continue, he's going to be so miserable. He's going to make everybody's life miserable. And so what's the answer? Well, I gave him the answer. I gave him the answer. The answer is simple, actually. But I'm not going to tell you the answer. Because everybody's answer the same. But I gave him the answer. And he says he's going to do it. And the answer is just following some direction. That's all. It has to do with who you hang out with. It has to do with who you hang out with. Isn't that what it's about? It's about who you... I'll tell you all about yourself. All I got to find out is who you hang out with. All I got to do is find out where you're hanging, who you're keeping company with, who you're talking to, who you're looking to be with. And that's all I got. Who you listening to? What are you doing? I asked him a question, and I told him, I said, I ain't looking to sponsor anything. I got enough. I'm not looking to grab sponsees, or I'm not campaigning. I got enough of them. You know, I mean, I wouldn't turn anybody down, but I said, I'm just that. I said, you have a sponsor? And he says, yeah. You ever go by and see? He says, yeah. We watch sports together. I said, that's your deal. That's your deal. I'm not putting down a sponsor. I said, that's your deal. I said, let me tell you something. You're getting out of this precisely what you should get out of this. That's what AA is for you. That's what this whole program is. That's what these steps are for you. You know, they're all there so that you can go watch a boxing match with your sponsor. There's nothing wrong with boxing. They're all there so you can go to a football game or go fishing. That's what AA is for you. That's what this whole thing is for you. You know, this isn't about a relationship for you. This is about boxing and football and going out to dinner and hanging out and making money. That's what this is to you. You know, there's no relationship there. There's just camaraderie watching a football game. You know what I mean? But without God. It's all without God. It's not searching for that deal. And so I'm going to end it up by saying that point, saying this. In Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, and as a matter of fact, I had him read this. Because that's why he was in my office. He was in my office because of what Bill Dawson said, the man on the bed said in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. You know something? I'm going to tell you something. Here's the deal. I'm going to tell you about you. I'm going to tell you about you. That's why this is why you're in this room. You may not even know that, but this is why you're here. This is why you go to AA meetings. You don't even know this. But I'm about to reach you why you go to AA meetings. You think you know why you go to AA meetings, but I'm going to tell you why you go to AA meetings. You want to hear it? Okay, now listen. This is why you guys are here today. Well, I don't have to. You want to know why you're here? Because you see, alcoholics are all the same. We're all the same. We've never changed. There's nothing new under the sun. You know why this book works? It was written 70 years ago. You know why these stories work? Because there's no difference. Their experiences are ours. Their thoughts are our thoughts. They're the exact same. You know what Dr. Young said? He says, I've never been successful with an alcoholic of your sort. That's what he said the role model has. I've never been successful. You know what that means? That means he's never been successful with an alcoholic of your sort. Because you're exactly like Rosalind Ellen Hazard. You think exactly like he thought. This is all a compilation of, you know what this is? This is your twin's story. Everybody in here is a twin of yours. And this is why you guys go to meetings. Let me read it to you. This is what Bill Dawson said. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. Now listen to this. You ready? I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew that there was even more, something I hadn't got. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two, after I had come out of hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, "Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people." In the original letter by Henrietta Seidling, she said what he actually said, "and shouting it to other people." I thought, I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing. And he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, "the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling people about it," has been a sort of golden text in AA program for me, right back to the first step, to the powerlessness, to realizing where the power came from, for being grateful, you know, to being that heart of the 10th leper, you know, thank you God, being right back in there, wanting this more, knowing there was something more, looking for the relationship, all a big package that these steps are designed for you to get to, so you can have an extraordinary life. So you don't need anything in your life but this in order to be okay. Always say, it doesn't matter what the car is. It doesn't matter what the relay is. It doesn't matter. You know why? Because you're a satisfied customer. You got a lot of people here, they're not satisfied customers. They're complainers. Things aren't good enough. They're a problem. They got problems. Because you're a satisfied customer. There is a difference between somebody who is doing this thing with the color blue, with the faith, with the relationship, and somebody that's doing the whole bit without this deal. There's a difference. The difference is in the eyes. And you know, some people recognize that. People see that. They go to meetings. You know the way they go? They go to meetings, they say, maybe this guy, maybe this girl. There's something going on here. I know that there's something going on here, something more, something that I haven't got. And that's what makes people that are interested in this thing and trying to do something, that's what makes them continue. They don't continue to stay sober. They don't continue for other people. They continue for him. Thank you very much. So in South Florida,